This is the second podcast on lending, and it's considering loan covenants. The first type of loan covenant we're going to consider is a covenant as to the condition of the borrower. Typically, the borrower will need to make covenants as to its own condition, as to its solvency, as to the amount of capital which it has, as to the sorts of information which it promises to provide to the lender throughout the life of the transaction. The underlying goal, contractually, is that if one of the covenants as to the condition of the borrower is breached, then the loan becomes immediately repayable, the principal occurrence on an event of default in a loan transaction is the acceleration of the repayment obligations, so they have to be repaid immediately. So it's for the lender really to stipulate in the contract the kind of information it requires from the borrower, and the kind of things which the borrower must do and the borrower must be for the loan contract to consider validly in effect. So these will tend to be things which affect the credit worth of that borrower. The borrower will have to assert, particularly if it's a corporate entity, that has the capacity to enter into the act, i.e. that is, borrowing the money is within its corporate powers, and also that the individual who purports to sign the contract on behalf of such a corporate borrower has the authority to bind the borrower into the contract. These are things I would suggest which a lender needs to check on a case-by-case basis. Now, the solvency, insolvency and bankruptcy of the borrower clearly very important. So it's a key term of a loan contract that the borrower remains solvent throughout. The problem in terms of insolvency is that if a loan only entitles the lender to purely personal contractual rights against the borrower, then how will we protect that lender against the possibility of the borrower going into insolvency? And there are two problems here. Well, there are two states of being. The first state of being is the condition before you go into insolvency. The second state of being is the condition of your being insolvent. And so what we want to do, our first issue, is to try and protect against insolvency so that if the borrower does become insolvent, the lender has some rights in property over and above the loan contract itself. And secondly, the other thing we want to do on behalf of the lender is to try and find some way of getting out of the loan contract if there is some sign, signal or warning that our borrower may be about to go into insolvency in the future. So a well-drafted loan contract doesn't simply specify that it's a breach of covenant when the borrower is actually insolvent, but instead will try and anticipate various forms of insolvency, as discussed in Chapter 7 in the textbook. The financial condition of the borrower is very important. That will rely centrally on accounts which are produced by particularly corporate borrowers, obviously, on an annual basis. If you're a company, you're required to publish annual accounts. But it may be, particularly if it's a large loan, that the lender requires accounting information more often than simply waiting for the annual accounts to be published. So you may require semi-annual statements of balance sheet, profit and loss, equally often cash flow, and it's typically the case when we come to see securities regulation, that large public limited companies are providing their financial information on a quarterly basis. And hear these things discussed in the press fairly frequently. When it's a smaller entity that's borrowing the money or a private individual, then there is often more need for sort of self-certified accounts to be produced. If you are the lender and also the banker operating a borrower's current account, then clearly you'll have access to more information probably in that way. So the financial condition of the borrower will be another important source of covenants. It'll then be an important question for the lender to calculate what it considers to be the credit risk associated with lending to this particular borrower or a particular type of borrower. What's important particularly is identifying when there has been some deterioration in that credit worth, which is sufficient to justify a termination of the loan agreement. Now, a lot of this is discussed in Chapter 19 in the book.
There are a number of ways in which this can be done in the book in paragraphs 23 and onwards, and we discuss credit downgrade clauses, which provide that the loan agreement can be terminated if the credit worth of the borrower deteriorates. But you're going to have to specify in that agreement how you're going to calculate that. It's often provided in market contracts that there's been there needs to be some material deterioration in the credit worth, and then leaves it up to the lender to decide what they think is material on a case-by-case basis. Clearly, if you're the borrower, you're not going to be entirely happy with that because it gives so much power to the lender. So one of the things that's often looked at is the net worth of an entity. A net worth is a picture taken from the balance sheet, and looks at all of the assets on the balance sheet, all the capital assets which that entity has, and also any cash at bank which it has. The thing about balance sheets, though, is that they are a measurement taken on a particular day, representing the worth, the capital worth of that entity across a financial year. And the trouble with balance sheets, therefore, is that it's possible to try and manipulate things so that they work on the day the measurement is taken, if you like. Doesn't necessarily give you a very good ongoing position of how that person works across the financial year. So that's all discussed. Lenders often look at debt coverage ratios and similar things. A debt coverage ratio is a measurement of assets to the amount of debt there is to be paid. So what you do is you look at how much cash there is compared to how much money is being paid out in debt repayments and debt interest. And that obviously depends on how your debt is structured. If you have large loans that are only paid off at the end of the loan term, as opposed to having loans that require payments of capital as you go along, then that clearly makes you very different. If you only have to pay off your capital every once in a while, that really concentrates the problem into one end of the year. If a borrower's got too much debt, if they're over-leveraged, to use that expression, then this clearly causes concern. If you don't have much free cash because you're spending so much money on paying off your debt, then that's going to make other lenders uncomfortable about lending to you. This is often referred to as interest coverage. So what we're trying to look for is the amount of free profit. And we'll look, therefore, at an entity's earnings before interest and tax and depreciation to see how much free cash there is left there. It became much more fashionable in the 1990s to look to cash flow statements so you can actually see where the cash is moving. Instead of just taking these annual snapshots of what's the profit and loss across 12 months, what's the balance sheet position at the end of the 12 months, you want to see how an entity is using its cash throughout the financial year, I would suggest. So you can see where the cash flows are, where the money tends to come in, and so you can spot whether or not there's a large splurge of money or a reorganisation of the business just before the balance sheet is calculated. Look at entities like Enron. One of the things they were managing to do was to massage their balance sheet and to make things that were liabilities look like assets. Whereas if you'd seen and measured actual cash movements, you would have seen that there was a lot more cash coming out, or certainly not nearly as much cash coming in as the value of the company tended to suggest. Restructurings are very important. If your entity merges with another entity or is taken over, or even just within a group of companies, if you are dealing with one particular group within a group of companies and suddenly that company's group decides to reorganise so that all of the assets on which you were relying, being held in that company to which you were lending money directly, are suddenly spirited out and paid away to another group company, then suddenly your whole loan transaction looks like it's on dodgy ground because your specific borrower doesn't have the assets which you thought. And remember, under the Salomon principle in company law, each company is a separate entity. So these are things you need to think about. If you're dealing with groups of companies, you want to find out where the assets are, and you want to make sure there aren't going to be group restructurings that will squirrel assets beyond your reach. And the provision of information here is very important. You clearly need to make it a covenant that you're going to have information provided to you.
If it's not publicly available information on which you're going to be able to rely all the time, then you need to specify what kind of information it is you need as a lender, when it needs to be given to you, and what sort of things it will include. You don't want your counterparty to be holding things back from you. End of podcast, I think.